Hi, I'm Rick Reynolds, and you're listening to A Fair Recovery Radio, Radio to the Power of God. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, sponsors, or advertisers of this station. Due to the sensitive nature of the topics discussed on this program, it is not suitable for children, so we strongly advise that children not be within listening range of this program. Also, please be advised that while we are counselors, what we're doing here tonight is not counseling, and if you have a need, we strongly advise that you seek professional help. The Affair Recovery Center is a community of counseling professionals and couples who have experienced the abundant blessing of reconciliation and renewal. We are dedicated to the restoration of marriages crippled by infidelity. Our mission is to offer hope, support, and recovery for couples and individuals who have suffered the pain as a result of infidelity, betrayal, or sexual addiction. We truly believe there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal. Hi. Welcome to A Fair Recovery Radio tonight. Tonight I'm here with my co-host, Wayne Baker.
Hey, Rick.
Hey, Wayne. And I know you guys have been wondering if we still exist since we've been gone for the last 2 weeks. Of course, we took off Easter weekend because we thought we would take a break, and then illness prevented us from doing it last week, and so we've missed 2 weeks in a row, which I'm really sad about. But hey, we're back again. John and Leslie are in route. No, they're still in El Paso, so unless they call in and join us, we won't hear from John and Leslie tonight.
Call in, John and Leslie, if you're listening.
Yeah, guys, if y'all are really being good, you call us tonight. We'll see how much you really care. And tonight we're actually going to begin talking about what, Wayne?
Well, I think we're going to talk about mistakes that the unfaithful spouse makes, right?
Yeah, well, I think that was the plan. And then we're also going to talk a little bit about if you are the unfaithful spouse, what in the world do you do? And so we've got several things. So if you don't mind, we're just going to get going on that tonight. So, Wayne, where do we start this evening?
Well, so what are some of the most common things, Rick, that the unfaithful spouse does, or the most prevalent things that they do?
Are you talking about our list of 20 that we have in front of us here, or are we just talking in general?
We can start there if you want.
Start the list. I don't know. Well, you know, I think for the unfaithful spouse, types of things that we tend to do, I think it's a little bit paradoxical. Sometimes the things we do that don't work very well are just trying to fix the whole situation and think that somehow we can move beyond it very quickly. And so that's one of the things that we found, if you're going to help a couple.
Yeah, quickly, I think, is the word there. A lot of unfaithful spouses really want to move. They've purged everything, and now they're ready to move on.
Exactly right.
So they just want to go fast.
Right. And I really would like to cover the list here, just because I just think there's some really important issues that I'll forget if we don't do what's written down here.
Chicken.
Well, we got plenty of time, so hopefully we'll be able to cover them. And guys, if you do want to call in tonight, you can call us at area code 512-365-9930. That's area code 512-365-9930. Or you can also call us toll-free at 888-5-ARC-EMS. That's 888-5-ARC-EMS. So, the first thing that we've got down in terms of common mistakes that the unfaithful spouse makes is just simply believing that once you're a fair partner and you have decided to do the right thing in returning to the marriage, that the affair is over. And boy, I tell you, that one is a bit crazy. I have found through the years that, in fact, the thing I've discovered through the years is that if you and your affair partner decide to end the affair in a very strange way, you've just decided to continue the affair, that you're still in a covert alliance with your affair partner if the two of you are working in some type of agreement to keep things together, that typically affairs end unilaterally, where one person finally decides before the face of God or in their own heart that they're done, regardless of whether their affair partner agrees with that. And so one of the really common mistakes is thinking that once we've agreed to end it, that we've ended it, when in reality we've just set up the fertile ground which causes it to continue. That's one of those that people normally don't think of.
Yeah, or rekindle later on down the road, right?
Definitely. Yeah, it comes back. It just takes one little phone call. Mm-hmm. Never had a bottle of beer. Call somebody and ask them out to see how they're doing or anything. What's the next one there?
You mean to do this one?
Yeah, you can have that one.
So the other thing that that we find that unfaithful spouses do is leak out information over time instead of getting it all out on the table very quickly. Sometimes it can go for weeks or even months. Just more information gets leaked out to the betrayed spouse.
Well, how would they do that?
Well, I think one reason why they do that is fear.
Fear is a good one.
Fear is a good one. I think sometimes, though, it is genuine, though, that as they start to come clean, there is other stuff that comes up to the top. But usually, in that scenario, it only takes a few weeks, not months. But I think it's fear, and like I know you talk about, and probably we'll talk about more throughout the program, it's who is their God? Is it their spouse, or is it God who they're living to?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's the way I'd see it. You probably see it in your office every day, just like I do. And it's really hard for the hurt spouse, I think. You know, as it comes out, it's like it destroys hope for the unfaithful spouse to do that. And hopefully you can get things out as quickly as possible for the sake of allowing healing. As we say at the Affair Recovery Center, you've got to be able to get down to ground zero before you can begin to actually rebuild. And as long as new information continues to come in, it's going to make it very, very difficult to start the healing process.
Yeah.
So the next one on the list is being defensive.
Mm.
That's a
big
tough one.
That's
a really big one. Because, I mean, it feels like you've really done the right thing if you've gone ahead and shared your heart, revealed your worst, most shameful secret in the world. And then when your mate somehow isn't appreciative because you've just told them that you've cheated on them and they keep asking the why question, it's really hard after they've asked the why question for the 753rd time not to finally get defensive and, you know, to sit there and even be tempted to answer the why question. You know, the thing that I think helps the hurt spouse the most is just to be able to say, you know what, I always say there's two good things you can tell your mate, maybe even three. The first one is, you're right when they're right. The second one is, I deserve that when they're wrong. And the third one is, on the why, I'm praying really hard to figure out the why, but it would be really dumb for me to answer the why, because if I tell you why at this point and don't really know, probably anything I say is going to sound defensive, and I don't want to sound defensive because there is no excuse for what in the world I've done. So I don't know what you think about that. Yeah. You want to add anything to
that?
That's
right. Yeah, just the questions that the betrayed spouse will ask, if they ask it 700 times, you answer it 700 times.
Right. I think it's hard for us to realize that they've got to be able to touch that wound mm-hmm. a bunch of times, and they're really not trying to drag us through the mud again. Literally, it's their way of beginning to try to process through it and just being consistent and saying, you know, you betcha. And the other reason, answer to the why, is just, I'm stupid. That was really dumb. I feel horrible. There's nothing. I mean, there is no excuse for what I've done. And because there's going to be a real temptation on this one to point out other deficits in the marriage, because they existed. Let's mm-hmm. face it.
Sure.
There were other things wrong in the marriage before an affair occurred. However, if you go back and begin dealing with those deficits prior to really kind of establishing and healing over the betrayal, then it's always going to come across as defensiveness. So you've got to be able to avoid, I think, going to the other marital deficits until there's been some healing in the marital relationship. By the way, if you are a hurt spouse and your mate, who is the unfaithful spouse, isn't listening us tonight, there are a couple of things you can do if you think this information might be helpful for them. And going and quoting what we're saying is probably not the best approach.
Right.
What do you think they ought to do, Wayne? Not to throw you under the bus here.
No. Log on to affairrecovery.com and listen to this. It'll be posted probably by tomorrow.
Hopefully it'll be posted by tomorrow evening. Absolutely. Yeah. That would be a good thing. But if you go and say, well, these two guys on the radio said this, they may not hear it from you as well as they might be able to hear it from me, because I've actually been the unfaithful spouse. So that makes more sense.
If they're going to get mad, let them get mad at us.
That's exactly right. There's enough trouble in the relationship at this point without you making it worse. What's another one?
Well, I think also just one more comment about the defensiveness, which kind of ties back to the leaking out of information. That's just going to perpetuate the defensiveness too, and the questioning. So get the information out quickly as possible to to speed up the process, because every time new information leaks out, it reopens that wound, like you just said. So another thing that the unfaithful spouse can do believe that everything your mate says. When people are emotional and hurt, they say things they don't mean, like, I want a divorce, I'm moving out, threatening to take the kids, and they overreact. So when emotions get high, don't believe everything that they say. You know, we've talked, I think, about on this program even that it's better to take a break. There's the when your heart rate gets about, your heartbeat gets over 100 beats per minute, it's better just to take a break, because adrenaline gets pumped into your system. You can't think rationally. So in the heat of those, some of those discussions, number one, don't believe everything that's said. And then number two, take a break and agree to come back and talk about stuff later.
Yeah, but how in the world am I supposed to respond when she's over there saying, I want a divorce or something like that? I mean, what do I do with that?
Well, you take a break. You say, we'll talk about this later. Or
are you saying I don't take that serious if she says I want a divorce?
Well, sure, it's serious, but it's Rick, you're throwing me under the bus here. Especially you're the one that wrote all this stuff.
And it's not fair.
Well, you don't want to minimize it. You don't want to minimize what they're saying, but realize that the climate and the atmosphere of the conversation at the moment, can people just say things in the heat, the emotion, that don't really mean it?
I mean, they may not want a divorce in a little bit. That could change.
Well, it could.
What if they just say, you know, you're just nothing but a stupid liar and you've never told the truth your entire life?
Yeah, you just would say, yeah, I resemble that.
Yeah, good. That's good. Our whole life has just been a lie. This whole marriage has just been nothing but a stupid lie. What do you say to that?
Well, not the whole thing, but there have been moments of not telling the truth or lying or...
What's something else you've heard people say? Just throw something at me.
Man.
This is fun. This is kind of, I'll enjoy this part.
You're putting me on the spot. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, because, I mean, on the this is just a lie thing, you know, the whole marriage has been a lie. I like the concept that Leslie uses that, you know, we really have two books, that it's not all just a lie.
Right.
That in reality, you know, there's going to be a rewrite of all of history, but it's not just a lie. And so...
Yeah.
Let's see. Can't think of another phrase yet that you've heard people say?
No.
You have no integrity. I mean, there's lots of really great stuff that comes through. So, oh well. If you think of any, just fire them.
I'll fire it back at you later.
Let me have some. Okay. That would be good. Okay, we have a caller.
Hello.
Yes, Sarah.
Yes. Hi. The question when somebody says about divorce. How about saying, I think maybe we just want to be divorced from the old patterns or the ugly patterns that we're in?
Well, that you could probably say, I would just want to be divorced from the old patterns or the ugly patterns we've been in. I think, you know, usually the way I respond to the word divorce is I would say, well, I can understand why you'd want to divorce me. I would want to divorce me if I could. I don't quite know how to do that. So why in the world wouldn't you want to divorce me? I mean, at this point...
That sounds kind of condescending.
I don't think that's... I wouldn't say it condescendingly. I would just say, you know, after all I've done, I can understand why it would be very, very difficult for you to consider being married to me. So why wouldn't you want a divorce at this point? I mean, I hope and pray you change your mind at some point. But at this point, you know, I think I would want to allow my mate to have all the emotions that he or she needs to have in order to work through this thing, and certainly wouldn't begin to, I mean, I would tell them I don't want to be divorced. I would be very clear about that. But at the same time, I would encourage them to seek God.
Yeah. Also, do you consider adultery or affair as a form of a domestic violence?
Certainly, I think that in some instances it can be phenomenally abusive.
Well, it breaks the spirit.
Right. I certainly wouldn't say that it's something that I don't know that I'd consider it a form of, quote, domestic violence, but I would certainly put it in the case of abuse. And that type of betrayal is just as devastating, maybe even more so than other types.
Yeah, it can feel like complex trauma. The same, it can feel the same as if there's physical abuse or a life-threatening circumstance. It can certainly feel the same.
Well, I know for me, I just feel like I've been beat up.
Yeah.
You know, just emotionally. What is, since you are men, what is the psychology, though, of a man? My husband and I are separated 4.5 years, but still says that this woman, that they're just friends. What is the psychology of still the denial?
Well, in their mind, it may be the rationalization even more than denial, that they hang on to the fact that, you know, if it's just this way, you know, there's a denial just says there's nothing there. I think a rationalization would explain why the relationship is okay. And, you know, obviously, someone who does that really doesn't want to deal with the reality. But we do really appreciate you calling us tonight,
okay,
Sarah. And we hope you have a good night and that we can hear from you again sometime.
Okay, thanks.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You.
Thanks for calling.
Does your life seem void of meaning? Do you struggle with depression? Is marriage not turning out as expected? Are you disappointed in the intimacy you share? Has an unwanted behavior taken your life hostage? Do uncontrollable feelings flood uninvited into your life? If so, we can help. Crossroads Counseling is a group of highly trained mental health professionals dedicated to Jesus. Crossroads Counseling is unique in its team approach. Each member has developed a specialty in order to complement their overall goal of helping each person they serve experience the freedom and abundant life afforded through the life of Christ. Give us a call, 512-346-9299. That's 512-346-9299. Or visit our website at crossroads-counseling.net. There is hope and healing. We believe there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal.
Listen to what others are having to say about the emergency marital seminar offered by the Affair Recovery Center.
This EMS weekend was very meaningful for me, and I feel it moved us along in such a positive way. I truly see success and forgiveness in the future.
Thank you so much. I came here for my wife, but I left with my life.
It was incredible to see God intervene in our marriage in such a visible way. Miraculous doesn't even begin to describe it.
You made this so easy for us to follow and understand, so comfortable.
As you can tell from past participants, the Emergency Marital Seminar has had a profound impact on the couples who have attended. If your marriage is at a point of crisis, we would like to invite you to come join us March 30th, 31st, and April 1st to be a part of this life-changing event. We can be reached at area code 512-346-9299, or you can go to our website at affairrecovery.com. Welcome back to Affair Recovery Radio. Radio to the power of God. And tonight I'm here with my co-host, Wayne Baker. And you can call us at area code 512-365-9930. That's 512-365-9930. And I want to make a slight correction after that last commercial. Actually, the next EMS, the EMS for April, has actually been filled. And so there are no more openings for that particular EMS. The next EMS is not going to be until May 18th, 19th, and 20th. And it's also filling up fairly quickly. So if you are interested in attending one of our EMS seminars, please go visit our website at affairrecovery.com and check out the EMS, that's Emergency Marital Seminar, or you can also call us here in Austin at area code 512-346-9299, or you can call toll-free at 888-5-ARC-EMS. That's 888-5-ARC-EMS. So, let's continue on with our discussion. Wayne, what's next on the list there?
Yeah, so the next thing that betrayed spouses will do is they'll try to live life normally. They've come clean with everything, hopefully, at this point, so they're ready to move on. But a lot of times, they might want to try to continue some of their old behaviors of staying out late or doing some of the normal things that they did that maybe were high-risk situations for them. So what they want to try to do, the antidote for that is try to create this culture of safety for them and for their mate as she tries to recover and work her way through this.
How long is this process going to take in terms of her getting better?
It'll take a couple years. I think it can take and we've seen, the more trauma that a betrayed spouse, whether male or female, has had in their childhood or their background, it's going to take even longer.
Right. You know, one of the next ones, I think, is trying to defend your affair partner. This is one that personally I tried out, and I just, for any of you who've been unfaithful, I certainly do not recommend this one. I mean, actually, I was trying to take responsibility for, you know, hey, this is all my fault. It's all my bad. That was really a horrible thing I did. That really made Stephanie incredibly angry because she wanted to be upset also with my affair partner, and rightfully so. And I didn't understand that in some ways by doing that I was almost robbing her or telling her feelings toward the other person weren't correct. And obviously my affair partner did have her own culpability in what was happening. So defending the affair partner, not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah, I would think, don't you have to be very careful about that? Because even though it can be perceived that you're defending your affair partner when you're not trying to do that, it's in the minds of the receiver of that information sometimes.
Right. And I think my problem was when she was saying, well, this is also her fault, and I would sit there and say, no, I need to take 100% responsibility. It really was partially her fault.
Yeah.
I mean, I still don't blame my affair partner personally, but I needed to not defend her also.
Right. Yeah.
Not a smart
She's
move.
A grown woman that had an affair with a married man.
That's exactly right. She knew better, right?
Right. Yep.
It was her bad, too.
Well, so the next one, the next thing that we want to talk about is trying to avoid talking with your spouse about their feelings. That's another thing that the betrayed spouse or the unfaithful.
There
thank you.
You're going to help you out a little
Thanks,
bit. Here.
I appreciate that. The unfaithful spouse will try to do, and this, and particularly when the betrayed spouse is a wife, she will get through the trauma of this by talking about it and talking about her feelings about it. And for the unfaithful spouse, particularly if you're a male, you need to allow her to do that. It will pay off for you in the long run, but you need to allow her to talk about her feelings, ask her questions about her feelings, and just let her go with that.
Yeah, but I mean, if I bring up the topic, she may kill me.
Well...
I mean, you
get to go be with Jesus, man. It's better for you.
I guess it would be. I probably told the story on here already, but when I first went into recovery, the first guy I talked to, he asked me, "What's the consequence of sin, Rick?" And I said, "Death." And he said, "Good. Anything your wife does short of killing you at this point is going to be mercy."
That's right.
Yeah. But it's really scary, but that was a good point. You know, we need to be able to let them talk about their feelings. Mm-hmm. Another mistake that I think the unfaithful spouse makes is pointing out your husband or your wife's faults or failures. And of course, you can do this very easily by trying to justify why you had the affair or just simply in trying to answer the question as to why. And sometimes, I mean, some of the faults or failures can be pretty significant. I mean, if let's say, you know, you point out the fact that you haven't had sex in 7 years, so, you know, what the heck did you expect? And while there may be obviously a huge glaring problem because of the lack of physical intimacy in a relationship, that's not the place you start in dealing with betrayal. Right. Would you agree with
that?
Oh,
yeah. Oh, yeah. Don't go there.
Yeah, exactly right. So,
well, and then the next one is really about taking your spouse to the same places, the same restaurants, the same places for vacation that possibly you and your affair partner went. These can be reminders, and I think we're going to talk about reminders more in detail a little bit later. But on any given day, they might be as many as 50, 60, 70 reminders for the betrayed spouse. And each time they have to calm themselves down and work through the whole process so that they can just function. So taking your spouse to a place where you went with your affair partner is not a good idea.
Well, what if they don't know that this is a place I went to my affair partner with? Would there be a problem taking them there then?
Yeah, but it could be a reminder in it, or for you.
Right.
That's not going to keep you in the midst of the relationship.
Yeah, and if they ever do find out that you took your affair partner there after you take them there.
Ebole.
Yeah, that would be really bad. So that's a good general rule of thumb.
Yeah.
It really is. Now, if it's you've gone to every place in the city of Austin or city of Denver or something like that, it gets a little bit trickier.
You might need to move.
That's what I'm thinking.
Seguin.
Nashville is looking good.
Yeah.
But, yeah, watching out for those places, that's an important thing. Telling a lie of any sort. You know, I think there are two types of lies. There's lies, which are made up of fabrications, and deceptions, which are basically about omission. But the problem is, if you're trying to reestablish some sort of credibility with your mate, any sort of lie, even if you aren't totally truthful about what time you leave the office, to them, that is going to carry the same weight as the fact that you lied about, you know, having talked to your mistress, or, I mean, any type of deception carries a huge, just carries the same weighting.
Would Why is that?
I think that the hurt is so extreme, the sense of betrayal. And so once you, once again, kind of betray them by not being honest and truthful, it just reinforces in their mind the truth, the fact that you're not a truth teller. And they really, honesty is the primary thing that's going to begin to establish safety in this relationship. And even if it's disappointing them by not having left the office at the right time, that is far better to deal with that disappointment by being honest with them than trying to protect them and to spin your image, pretend to be better than you really are, and telling an untruth. Or at least deceiving them about what time you left. Because if they find out anything different, then you've just started back at ground zero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the next thing that the unfaithful spouse can do that's not very good is not supporting your wife in her own recovery. She has a journey to walk through now, too. And it's an unintended journey many times for her. And it can take her longer, even. Again, depending on her own background, and obviously we're talking about the wives as being the betrayed spouses, because frequently, more and more, that's what it is. But we're seeing growing numbers of unfaithful women, too. So the hurt spouse will want to continue to understand why this happened, how did it happen, and ways to avoid it in the future. They'll often interpret what their mate is trying to do by punishing them. And this can cause you, as the unfaithful spouse, to try to quit working on your own support and your own recovery and also just trying to tell your spouse just to get over it. I hear that a lot. Why can't she just get over it? Why can't she just get over it? Well, she can, but it's going to take some time, and she needs your support.
Right. I think it's difficult for people to sit there and really believe the fact that this is going to take 18 to 24 months. And we're not saying that because we want to keep people struggling with this for 18 to 24 months. We're just saying this because, you know, after doing this for years, this is what we see.
Yeah.
It just takes a season of about a year to two. And the first year is really much more intense than the second year, but there is going to be that kind of a testing of the waters to see, you know, are you serious in your own recovery? So allow your mate to continue doing what she needs to do to recover.
Yeah, and I think along those lines, we see that the first 90 days really is crucial and the most painful. If they can make it through that, it does get a little easier, don't you think?
Absolutely. And I think we're coming up against a break. We thank you for joining us here at Fair Recovery Radio, Radio to the Power of God, where we believe there's nothing the nearness of God can't heal. Please give us a call at 365-9930. That's 365-9930.
Do you believe in modern-day miracles? I do. Because daily, I witness them as couples who are torn asunder by infidelity are reconciled. Hi, I'm Rick Reynolds, founder of the Affair Recovery Center. Please join us each Sunday evening from 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time at Affair Recovery Radio, Radio to the Power of God, where we witness on an ongoing basis the miracles of God. We have seen and witnessed that there is nothing the nearness of God cannot heal.
Welcome back to Affair Recovery Radio, Radio to the Power of God. And so tonight we're talking about things the unfaithful spouse, or ways the unfaithful spouse can actually help the betrayed spouse in the recovery process. Which brings us to the next point, which is not being consistent in the recovery plan you lay out for your mate. And this one is absolutely huge, because ultimately, if you don't show your mate that you're taking responsibility for what's going on here, then they're certainly not going to feel safe. And more than that, they're going to feel like they need to begin taking responsibility for your recovery. And that's the last thing in the world that you actually want, because who wants to feel like they're being policed by their mate on an ongoing basis? And so I think that if you can lay out the plan and then be consistent with the plan that you lay out so that they can feel safe, because that's really the place that their safety is going to begin to, I believe, be established from.
Yeah, I see that all the time. You've got to just commit to something and stick to it.
Right, and that's for a long season. And if you're going to change the plan before you change the plan, don't do that one unilaterally. That's the one you go and say, I really think we ought to kind of lower this barrier. I'd like to talk about changing this, but let them know. And I know it may seem painful to have to go and discuss it with them and open all of that up, and it may make them really afraid, but at least have the courage to go and address it directly with them.
Yeah. That's right. So the other thing is not keeping agreements that you make. Kind of tied back to something Rick said a few minutes ago, but if you tell your spouse one thing, that you're going to not eat lunch with a woman or be in a meeting with a woman, then that's what you need to do. And if circumstances change where you've got to be in a meeting, you want to tell your spouse way ahead of time, so that she's got time to process that and work through it. If you're going to be home by 6, be home by 6. Don't call at 6:15 and tell her you're just now leaving the office.
No joke. You certainly don't want to be. Yeah, exactly.
Well, it begins to cast doubt on your integrity and your commitment to your plan and to your marriage. And it's going to make it difficult for her to trust you again.
Right. Now, the next one that I would say is really important is not answering, telling her to forgive you. Excuse me. I jumped one ahead. I was going to steal yours, wasn't I? Yeah. I mean, one of the things that we really believe is you do not want to make the mistake of telling your mate or asking your mate even to forgive you. Now, certainly, I am somebody that advocates taking responsibility for what you've done, repenting, and letting them know that you're grieved over what you've done to them. But to me, if you sit there and say, you need to forgive me here, I mean, that's what God teaches, you've got to forgive me, ultimately you're kind of placing a moral imperative on them. The way we teach our clients...
He also says, thou shalt not commit adultery, doesn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, that one too, I guess. Picky. but what we typically teach... is to ask the other person or to say to the other person, I hope you'll be able to forgive me. And then to do whatever is necessary to help them forgive you. Because if you just sit there and kind of demand forgiveness, that really doesn't put your mate in a place where it makes it easier for their heart. You're not facilitating their healing process through that particular type of action.
Well, and ultimately, I mean, we teach and preach whatever... that forgiveness is not optional. And
right.
I think the betrayed spouse ultimately knows that. It's just, it takes time, don't you think? Just
right, and carefully, some of you may have just gone sideways when we said forgiveness is not optional. We do believe that reconciliation can be optional.
Right.
So that forgiveness and reconciliation are not necessarily synonymous.
Yeah.
But that's a whole other program when we do the one on forgiveness and what that all means. So.
Okay, so... We're at number 15 now. The other thing that unfaithful spouses can do is not answering all their questions, and it may be the same question 25,000 times and you need to answer it. And a lot of times, though, some of the questions you might want to just say, I want you to think about and pray about that question. I'll answer it, but I'm going to answer it 24 hours from now if you still want to know what the answer to that question.
Do you ever have people say, you've got to be crazy if you think I'm going to answer all the questions that she's asking me?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I just tell them you got to answer them.
Why do you think it's important?
Well, I think it's to rebuild a relationship based on truth and to be fully loved. You say this all the time. You've got to be fully known. And knowing where you are and where you've been, that's helpful. I think also it just going back to building from ground zero. You know, if you think about 9/11, they sifted through every piece of that stuff, a handful of stuff at a time. So it can take some time, but it's still got to be done.
Right. The other thing I think when you don't answer questions, just my personal opinion, is you become amazingly controlling. That you're controlling your mate by the flow of information, and you're really robbing them of choice. And that's not very nice. You need to allow your mate the ability to be able to make their own choice, because otherwise you'll never fully know whether or not you were the chosen one in that situation if you don't answer all of those questions.
Yeah, and by withholding information, they can't move on, right?
Right, exactly right. Not talking to her. And that could also be a him. And that's really... you can be so angry sometimes about just being discovered, or the way your mate's responding, or the fact that they're not getting over it, or the people that they've told, that in your anger, the approach you may take can be a passive-aggressive approach, where you just sit there and go, well, I know how to drive them absolutely nuts. I'll just quit talking to them. And that's called passive-aggressive. And ultimately, your intent is just to hurt them, but you don't want to kind of go mano a mano with them, so you just kind of shut up. And I'll just say it's not a nice way to play. And that's a mistake that a lot of unfaithful spouses make. You know,
it's cold war.
It's cold war at that point. And so you kind of you become a turtle, and then the betrayed spouse, betrayed spouse becomes a shark, and they're banging up against that turtle shell all the time, trying to get the turtle to come back out again. Please don't do that to your mate.
It doesn't happen.
And it doesn't help either. No progress is made with that game.
Yeah.
But I do have a question on that one. So let's say that it feels very dangerous to give the information to your mate because they flood emotionally and they go crazy every time you give them information and they don't do well with the information. How would you recommend, because you're the trauma expert, how would you recommend dealing with someone who's traumatized like that?
Well, there are a couple of things. I think if you want to create this environment of safety, and sometimes it's better to answer some of those questions in our offices, really. I think that's a place where we see a lot of that happening. Also, if you can sit there with the spouse and be willing to just let her go off and not you react to some of that. She may flood or he may flood, but just let them do that for a while.
Yeah, I don't think you can let the flooding keep you from doing the right thing.
Yeah, you can't. It's going to happen.
What if you feel like they get suicidal?
Well, then you need to call somebody.
Like who?
Well, call 911.
That's a good one.
There's a mental health hotline wherever you are. And I don't know the number off the top of my head in Austin, but if they get suicidal, they need help and need it quickly.
Right. Or you could call any mental health professional at that point, mm-hmm. or MD, or even the ER is a good place to go. Right. But yeah, if flooding gets to be an issue when you're answering questions, I would advise get a third party to help you through that process, because that's going to be really difficult. This is one that Leslie talks about, which is trying to get your mate's friends and family on your side, hoping they'll help your mate wake up and see reality. If you call the your family members, or her family members, I mean, and try to say, you know, she's not forgiving me, she's being horrible, you know, if you'd seen everything she had done, you would have had an affair. Ultimately trying to get her family turned against her or him, because I keep speaking of, because we're guys, I'm sorry for my prejudice, guys. But if you try to turn their family against them and try to get them to force their mate, their daughter or whatever back into the marriage, it's just going to feel like a larger betrayal. So I certainly recommend that you avoid that one.
Yeah. The other thing is really we see unfaithful and betrayed spouses do this sometimes, is that there is a simple formula, a set course to fix this problem. And though there are steps that we take to help couples work through this, it's not linear in nature, and it's going to feel like a roller coaster at times. It is not a simple, quick fix, so don't buy into that you're going to get over this in a week.
I'd agree with that. There's another one, threatening, because you believe the threat will make your spouse see the light and convince them to ultimately fly right. In other words, sometimes we begin to threaten as the unfaithful spouse, even trying to gain or garner what we would think is a lack of power. And, you know, we're going to leave you. We're going to cut the finances off. You've got to do this. You need to get over it. We're going to move on. You can't be hurt. And while fear, guilt, and shame may work as a short-term motivator, they're only effective as long as the fear, guilt, and shame are really in place. And ultimately, the problem with that approach of threatening once that fear, guilt, and shame wears off, now you've got the initial hurt and the initial anger piled on top of the new hurt and the new anger by the way you're treating them. And so you end up just exacerbating the problem in the long run. And so for the unfaithful spouse to try to use threats as a way of making their mate fly right, that one's not going to be effective. I mean, it really takes, again, the process of allowing them to grieve what's happened to them, to be able to move beyond what's occurred.
Yeah. And then the last one that we have, and there's probably others, is really kind of the saddest one to me. It's when one or both of you will use children or grandchildren as pawns to manipulate your mate into staying. And that really ultimately only hurts the kids.
Yeah, I see that one a lot,
yeah.
And that one's really sad. It's kind of like, well, you know, think about what you're going to do to the kids if you divorce me. Think about, of course, if I were the hurt spouse, I would come back and say, well, think about what you did to the kids by what you did, you know, and that sometimes they'll say things that can be really infuriating, I think, to the unfaithful spouse, and it's hard not to come back and say, you know, and I think it is okay to say, please consider this. But there's also a way that we can threaten to take children, that we use children as pawns to ultimately push the relationship or to push recovery, and that's not a great way to go. Do you have anything else to add?
Well, I think sometimes we see kids exposed to some of this stuff that out of a hurt spouse's pain or a betrayer's or the unfaithful spouse. We see their kids being exposed to some stuff that they have no business being exposed to.
Right, because, you know, like the unfaithful spouse, a really common mistake is to tell them maybe things that their mom or dad has done, which is why they did what they did to rationalize, in other words, trying to get the kids back on their side, which, again, is really harmful to the kids. That's called spousifying, and that is not good for your kids.
Right.
So we're up against the break again. Did you have anything else you want to say there? Thank you for listening to Affair Recovery Radio. We'll be back in just a moment, and you can call us at 365-9930. That's 365-9930. Thank you.
Hope. Hope for the brokenhearted. Hope for those who have made a mistake. Hope for those impacted by a betrayal. Hope for couples who feel no hope. The Affair Recovery Center is designed to offer hope, direction, and help for couples and individuals whose lives have been ripped by infidelity. There is hope at the Affair Recovery Center. We can all personally testify to what God can do by what we have personally experienced. Let us help. We are a community of counseling professionals and couples who have experienced the abundant blessing of reconciliation and renewal. We are dedicated to the restoration of marriages crippled by infidelity. Our mission is to offer hope, support and recovery for couples and individuals who have suffered pain as a result of infidelity, betrayal, or sexual addiction. We can be reached at affairrecovery.com, or you can call toll-free at 888-527-2367. That's 888-527-2367.
Welcome back to Affair Recovery Radio, radio to the power of God, and we have a caller on the line. Leanne, how can we help you tonight?
I don't really need help. I just had a comment about it because...
We'd love your comment.
Okay, so my husband had an affair, and...
I'm sorry.
He's not a believer, but he is a really good man, and I really love him. We've been married for 17 years, and it was 3 years ago. And I just wanted to say, well, I think your suggestions are great. I think they're all true because it's what I experienced. At first, I didn't think that I would ever stop crying. At first, I couldn't stop crying, and I thought our marriage was over, and I thought it was the end. And but, you know, there is recovery, and there is life after that, and we are so happily married now. We are stronger than we ever were before, and I think that one of the things that really, really, really helped me was that he allowed me to talk about it when I wanted to talk about it.
Amen.
He allowed me to cry when I wanted to cry. He allowed me to vent, to ask questions. He never said, okay, enough is enough. It's been long enough. He never did that. He always... If I had to go over one more time, that one time that you did so-and-so and so-and-so, and that was really wrong and it really hurt me, if I had to do that 10 times or 20 times, whatever, in order to be able to get that out of my system, he allowed me to do that. And it was just important that I be able to cry as much as I wanted to, that I be able to scream if I wanted to, that I just be able to... That was part of my healing process.
Leanne, I want to tell of our listeners here, you are not a plant. That's correct, right? I mean, nobody told you to call into the program?
No, absolutely not. As a matter of fact, I was just surfing channels and in the car on the way to dinner.
Yeah, Leanne, I'm sitting here looking at Rick thinking he planted you.
No, absolutely not. They are not. I didn't even hear all of them. I only heard like the last three or four of your suggestions. And it's been such a powerful experience in my life, a life-changing experience.
That's exactly right.
That has brought me closer to God, brought me closer to my husband, and I made mistakes through it all. He never, ever would tell the kids this or that, whatever, but the truth of it was, my daughters are grown. I mean, they're 23 and 25, but they're adults, and I mean, I did sometimes talk to them or cry to them when I shouldn't have, and it took them a while to heal, too, because they harbored so much resentment and anger towards him, and that was wrong. It was so wrong, but in my pain and in my, it was a fog. It was like I was poisoned, and the thing was is that the woman was my friend. We'd been friends for 13 years, and so it was doubly worse because I felt doubly betrayed, and it was just a thing where everybody kept telling me I was crazy, I was crazy, I was crazy, and then in the end, I wasn't crazy.
No, you weren't crazy.
Anyway, I am, it's not that it's not still there. Like, I know, and they always, such a cliche to say a scar. It is like a scar, like you cut yourself a long time ago, had stitches, and you can look down and you can see that scar, but it doesn't hurt anymore to touch it, and I hate it that it happened. But yet, good grace of God, I got through it. We got through it, and things are good right now, and they have been. And you know, he just would say, "I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry." And you may need to say you're sorry 100 times, 100 times, if you really want the person to forgive you. If you really want forgiveness, and you know what, the thing is my husband's not a Christian. I pray for his salvation every day, and I know that God will answer that prayer. But the thing is, for me, it was important that I wanted my husband to know what mercy felt like, what it
Absolutely.
Looked like, what it
That's
tasted
great.
Like. I wanted him to know what mercy was. And how could I mean, I know people say, well, God forgave me. It wasn't that simple just to say, God forgave me, I'll forgive him. It took, and I did forgive him. I forgave him 100%, but to be able to trust him again, to be able to feel happy again and to laugh and giggle and cuddle and love and not have that person in between us again, it took the grace of God to be able to do that, but it took time and it took love and commitment to be able to say, you know, this man is my family. As much as my children are my family or my mother is my family, this man is my family. And I want him to know what mercy feels like. I want him to experience it so that he, when he does come, you know, into contact with God and his mercy, he'll know what that's like.
Right.
And so, anyway, I just wanted to call because it was such an intimate, personal, life-changing experience for me. It forever changed my view of God and his love for me and his ability to carry me through the worst time of my whole life. And I did.
And Leanne, from my perspective, having been the unfaithful spouse, my wife went through the same thing you went through, and I had an affair with her best friend. And our experience, I think, really mirrors what you went through. And the thing that we've learned is no place does God's redemption play out more than it does through this circumstance. I mean, this is a miracle, and people cannot convince me that modern-day miracles don't occur. The fact that you're still with your husband and you still love him, that's a miracle from God.
Yeah.
And I do. I love him more than ever. I love him as much as I ever loved him. It didn't change that. It changed, you know, and there's still, it took me a really long time to not check every single thing he was saying or check our phone bill or check our, I did, I checked. And I did look and make sure, and I had to. You know, I had to. It was something I had to do. I had to set, because of the you're crazy thing, I had to make sure that I wasn't being made a fool out of or I wasn't being duped. And it took me a really long time to let go of that, but I did let go. And I trust him. Yeah, I trust him 100%. I trust him.
You might enjoy going back, if you get a chance, if you've never heard us before, Leanne, go into affairrecovery.com. And some of the podcasts we've got from the radio program, we've got some one recently with two hurt spouses telling their story, and it sounds real similar to yours. You might just enjoy listening to somebody else share their experience, too.
I will.
We need to get on with the program tonight.
Okay.
Thank you for calling,
Leanne. Thanks for calling,
Leanne. God bless
you,
girl.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. And that's how it works.
Yeah. So, Rick, I know as we're talking about what the unfaithful spouse can do, you had some other comments, some other...
I wanted to talk about the third option, which sounds, and actually two of them. I hope we can get them in the last couple of minutes here. But the third option, I think a lot of times when I was going through recovery, and Stephanie would want me to do things, and, you know, I really didn't want to feel like she was controlling me. And so it just made me really mad because even if I felt like it was the right thing to do, what she wanted, I didn't want to do it simply because she was asking me to do it. So I ended up kind of having this very strange out-of-body experience all the time. She'd say, you need to go do this. And I'd go, well, now that you're telling me I don't want to go do this, I want to do the opposite because of just the dynamics in our marriage. And I finally realized that Jesus dealt with this also. And Jesus's approach, I call this the third option. And I learned it's about kind of power in relationships. But when he said, you know, you don't have any power. No one is making me do this. I'm doing this of my own accord. This is, you know, you can't do anything unless God calls you to do it anyway. And I think in my marriage, I learned that I need to do things for God. And even if Stephanie wants me to do the same thing, my immediate response really needs to be, look, I'm going to do that, but I'm not doing it just because it's what you want. It's because it's what God wants me to do, and it's the right thing for me to do, and that's why I'm following that course. That way, it's almost like it's from me and not because of her, and it really needs to be from inside of me rather than something outside of me making me do it.
Yeah. I'm doing it for me and because I need it.
Right.
Not for you.
Yeah, and don't get, because I almost had to sit there and say, it's not for you, this is for me. And as strange as that sounds, there's something very empowering.
There's a benefit that for her, huge benefit.
Right, and because what's one of the benefits for her that you see? Because to me, it frees her up because she knows I'm doing it for me and it's not for her, and it allows her to begin to let go of the entire
Yeah, it builds this atmosphere of security and safety as she sees you take leadership and responsibility in that.
Right, and again, it puts the process inside out rather than, you know, for me it feels like, rather than it being something that's being forced on me out from the outside. So I want it to come from within me rather than it being something without outside of me.
Right, yeah. What was the other thing you wanted to talk about? We just got a couple more minutes.
Not even that much. I wanted to talk a little bit about the importance of letting your mate know. Good. This will be a 3 minutes. So hot dog. We are rocking and rolling, man. We are. But letting your mate know that you appreciate the fact that they are still here with you. I really believe every day you need to tell your mate you appreciate the fact that she or he is still with you after everything you've done, because it is a really, really difficult process, and you may not recognize how hard it is for them, but it is hard. And that little bit of gratitude toward them, just letting them know and recognizing that this is really hard, means a whole lot to them. And they need to be hearing that on a regular basis. I think to them at that moment, that's probably as meaningful as I love you. Mm-hmm. Just the recognition that this is a big deal, and thank you so much. Daily, letting them know you appreciate it every day that they're still here with you.
Yeah, that sounds really good, really huge.
Anything you want to add to that? All right, anything else? Because I've got some more. I'll keep going.
Keep going.
If you're in the midst of all of this stuff, the other thing is empathy, and we'll probably have a whole program on empathy, but being able to understand what your mate is going through, how they feel, and being able to communicate that is going to be huge for them. So begin to ask God to reveal to you, and just pray and begin to wonder what it's like to be them living with you. Because if you can begin to communicate the ability to understand their hurt, that at one level is going to begin to allow them to let go of the hurt in the relationship and to feel safe with you once again. So
it's kind of the first step, really, isn't it?
Yeah, that's one. Well, telling the story is the first step.
Okay.
And then the second one would be the empathy, yeah. I think, certainly. As we're wrapping up here, we certainly ask that you people pray for us this weekend. We have an EMS coming up. We have 10 couples coming in from all over the U.S., and so it'll be intense Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And we just pray that they'll be able to find a path for recovery for their own marriages. In addition, if you need our resources, you can contact us here in Austin at area code 512-346-9299. That's 346-9299. Anything you want to add as we close out tonight, Wayne?
Thanks for joining us.
Oh, absolutely. And we just pray that you'll be able to see God in all things this week and understand there is nothing the nearness of God cannot heal. Thank you. Yeah.